Steve, we've never had to address more than like three people at a shot.
The most comforting things that I could possibly have near me are books like this and a stand at the high line. Once I have that, then I'm in my element. If I have to stand in front of a crowd, I don't know if a book as it were to quote from or extended to stand behind. Recently I was at a Sheva Bracha center. I commandeered my son's stroller as a mock extender just to be able to have something, you know. I imagine if I was the President of the United States, so I'd be a teleprompter also, but like, you know, Baruch Hashem, that is not so much of the issue. I just want to start off by saying that one of the most amazing things that I've done this month so far was joining, as I've done many times in the past, the carnival at the Sanhedrin Children's Home. And once again, especially thanks to Mitch's alley-oops, but you know, generally speaking, it was an amazing event, and you saw a lot of simcha on the part of the kids there, and maybe even more simcha shining from the faces of the Torah Shag guys. And but as much as you always get a mishabera from Mrs. Braun about how amazing Torah Shag is and unbelievable, and where are the Lubavsky kids, and other things that you know you count on her saying, but she says to me, I shouldn't say her name. Moshe Bachner. So I just love the you know, I hope that I said to her, I hope that you could just be like a reference like that for everyone in Torah Shag, you know. Like the last little just give your name at every shidduch that he suggests. And then you're gonna be set. And but at the end as I said goodbye to her, so she said, no. Torah Shag, it's just all the boys are like the kind that you want your daughter to bring home. Hey, you know, Baruch Hashem, for that we came here. Think about that, guys. But what made me think about this, I guess, a little bit more deeply was I was just going through the schedule, going through the day, and thinking, this is like not an ordinary thing. This is not like standard schedule. This is not wake up for Shabbos, go to Seder, go to lunch, play ball, you know what I'm saying? Come in the afternoon, you know, either ends at, you know, either ends like, you know, this is a trip, or this. So it's 5:30, and I think it's 4:30 now. Afternoon ends. Is that correct? 4:30. Okay. We'll see if by the time they change the clock, so we can get there back to 3:30. You know, whatever it is. You know, the afternoon's always changing, and the schedule's always changing. But basically, Tom and Torah can get Kula, right? Torah gets everybody. And this is our lives. And a special occasion is an easy time to shine, to make things exciting. And the Torah even recognizes that's true. The Torah says that certain special things that happen, that since they're so amazing, it's always going to be like something else, something better, something beyond, something that you can connect with no matter what. And maybe this an edge of chosen zone or something like that. The Gemara says you could hear the Megillah from two different people at the same time. And the Gemara says you can't do that with most things. You can't. But you would say that when it comes to the Megillah, it's like so awesome. Like, you're going to pay attention anyway, you're going to hear it anyway, you're going to connect with it anyway. And of course, the trip is something special. But it just made me think of an idea that's, I guess, been percolating a little bit inside. You know, all the whole timing of Purim is based around the months. Haman was casting lots. It wasn't the fee of the Chinese New Year, it wasn't the fee of the solar year, it was the fee. The months that we have, I'm not sure who's ma'aber the shanim in the bezdin of Paras. I still don't have that straight. From what I understand, the Arab lunar months keep on falling behind. Somehow, Haman's months like were just alongside the Jewish months. So I'm not sure how that happened exactly. And you know, what did you do in the long winter's month in Paras when you were like, you know, January somewhere? Like, you know, did you have like extra time off? Like, how did it work? I don't know. But somehow it seems like the Persian months went together with the Hebrew calendar, even though we needed an extra month every couple of years. And the whole idea of a month is basically, it's a moon, it's reflecting the sun, disappears, comes back, it's a new month, and so on and so forth. And specifically again and again, the month, the whole month changed. As if like the moon has something to do with it. So it occurred to me that, you know, the moon does symbolize Klai Yisrael. the moon. And there's something special about the moon. Two things about it, really. One of them is that the moon is always changing. It's always changing. A little bit bigger, a little bit smaller. Sometimes it's on the up, sometimes it's on the down. And that's a fact that we live with every day. And somehow the more we're connected to our yadas, maybe the more we realize that. There's an up and a down. There's a fluctuation. There's an ebb. Sometimes you bounce back. But, you know, just take a, as we mentioned before, a long winter plan. It has its ups, it has its downs. You have your Chanukah learn-a-thon, you know, immediately followed by all you confess. You know, so you have your up and down right there. But you have so many different ups and downs, and what is added traditionally is a month that's a sort of a wild card. It can go in any way because there's a lot not to learn, there's a lot not to be serious, there's a lot not to accomplish, right? And there are people who even have shtelos, like, you know, from Hanukkah time, they're already producing the Purim video, you know, so that's like official Purim from doing anything. So there's so many things about Purim that maybe push you in one direction, but there's really so much beautiful stuff that Purim has to offer, even though it's a little bit of a, maybe a little bit of an ebb in our life. Well, I'm digressing a little bit. My point is like following. First of all, that the moon symbolizes never giving up hope. The moon disappears, and that's it, isn't it? There's nothing left. Only after it completely disappears to reappear again. The second thing that that occurred to me that the moon represents when it comes to Klal Yisrael is that precisely the fact that we're always going up and down, that one day my shachar is going to be amazing, the next day I'm not interested in getting out of bed. And it could always change. And even if I have a schedule, sometimes it will be much better, sometimes I'll understand the Gemara, sometimes I'm sitting in the same place, in the same shiur, came at the same time. Yesterday I got everything, and today I got nothing, and so it goes. When I have that glimmer of connection, when I have that fantastic feeling of understanding, when I have that feeling that I want to be the best Jew that I could be, the best person that I could be. So isn't that really something that's going to change tomorrow? And here's what I think is the key point. Maybe. But the moon is always changing. Let me ask you a question. Whoever here saw the banana like on one side, the first tiny little sliver the first day of the month, whoever saw it, whoever paid attention. Look down, it sits right there. Little sliver, notice on the screen? A little sliver, and then the month gets bigger, and then at the end of the month it's on the other side, moon, right? But you know what's special about the moon? One day a month, it's full. It's full, right? It's totally amazing, it's great, fantastic. It's the best day that we ever had. Now tell me, which one of those 29 and a half days, which one is the true reality of the moon? What's the reality? What's real? Can anyone tell me, how does the moon shape? Can I draw a picture of the moon as it is geometrically shaped? What shape do you draw? A circle. Why not a banana? Why not? And the answer is, because what is the moon in reality? What shape is it? It's full. The moon is always full. The moon is never getting smaller. The moon is always the biggest that you could possibly ever see it. It's just that most of the time, we don't realize that it's full. Most of the time, the angle that the sun is shining on the moon is off to one side or off to the other side, and therefore we only see a little part of the moon. So going back to how we, no pun intended, are reflected in the moon, when we have a great day, when we feel super connected to Shemoneh Esrei, when we go out of our way to give up on something that is really very important to us for another person, when we do something a little more difficult, whether it's walking the extra couple minutes to the shul where I'll daven better at, whether it's making sure that I stay in seder the whole time and don't go after the little coffee break that probably going to last to the end. All the little things, all the little pushes that we give. And it happens once in a while. The real me is that push. The real me is that connection. The real me is that happiness to do the right thing, to be the best person I could be. Because at the end of the day, as much as we almost never see it, it's only a glimmer that happens once a month, but the moon is full, that's what the moon really is. And I think that that's maybe a message that we can take with us in this month, Chodesh Adar, which is the Chodesh, it's the moon, that's Nepach Lohen, Yavin the simple, the whole month represents change, represents being turning inside out. No matter where I am, or where I started, where I ended, what change I'm going through, to realize that at the core, the biggest, the best, the greatest, the most special, the finest that I could be is who I really am, and to connect to that idea. I still remember as a young boy, I can't remember which TV show this was, and it's surprising since there are not so many TV shows that I was watching then. But it was something to do with a car race, all kinds of like nerds building cars that run all different motors and different fuels. So I remember just watching this car is powered by recycled whatever, this car is powered by wood chips, and this other car is powered by, it's a solar panels on top. And then obviously the rider, who's probably riding for kids, decides to have some fun, and the next car that rolls by, so the narrator is saying, the whatever it is, the guy who's announcing, so he says, oh, this car is powered by moonshine. So I remember wondering how powerful could moonshine be, and then later on, I remember that prohibition and what, so it could be there are a lot of cars in this room that are powered by moonshine. But the point is that I realized that, this is, the moonshine is really something that does power us, right? The idea of, there's a certain pintaliyah, there's a certain specialness that we have to ourselves, that's not something that's once in a while. It's something that we see and we feel once in a while, but at the core, that's what we really are. We really are being powered by moonshine, and whether it's a joke that you get or not, but the point is really that that's something, and I guess that sort of fits with Adler also, I didn't think of that before. Just don't tell Elmalee that I said that. Another just way this could get emphasized, very often we live in a certain world. Everyone here lives in his own world. What's the closest to him? And more layers of exposure that we have. And fine, that's our full moon. But in reality, that's what we're all about. And connecting to something that we're not really necessarily fully aware of or fully involved in all the time, but to sometimes ponder the fact that that's what we really are and who we really are. So just because we don't realize how great each of us doesn't realize how great he is all the time, feel as connected all the time, but to know that that's the case, to know that the moon is always really full, that's tremendously empowering. To know that Torah is the center of our life, whether or not we're sitting and learning 24 hours a day. That's not the point. The point is to realize, to point at something and say, this is who I really am, this is what I really am. One thing that I think that we could gain from this kind of attitude is the following. When something is part of your life, you think about it, it comes up, right? To borrow a story that happened in Europe 70 years ago, 80 years ago, there was a great rabbi named Lubavitch, and Rukum Lubavitch. Okay? Maybe the most charismatic rabbi to live in the last century, maybe. Phenomenal charismatic person had many talmidim. He was even accused by his Rebbe of turning out cadets. He was so charismatic that all of his talmidim just came out, and he was cookie cutters, punch them out one after the next. They all want to be exactly like their Rebbe. So if you look from Lubavitch, was once approached by a talmid. He was troubled. The Gemara says that the idea of tchilas and tzitzis is that you look at the blue and you're reminded of the sea, and that reminds you of the sky. Of course, the sky doesn't remind you of, the color of your sweatshirt. Doesn't remind you of, hey, is today a good day for ball and that. It reminds you, of course, that you say HaKavod, and that in turn connects you with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what you're wearing tzitzis with chilas for, because of that obvious connection, that very clear, 1, 2, 3, speed dial connection, that you look at your tzitzis, and right away you're at the Kisei HaKavod because of the fact that it reminds you of the sea, of the sky, of the Kisei. So he asked him, really, what's this all about? So he looked at him. He could have been ready in 2014. He says, there's another Gemara. The Gemara says that a person shouldn't stare, ponder the clothing of a woman that he knows, even when she's not wearing it, because if she's going to be doing that, she's going to start thinking about that woman. I'm sure you can relate to that more, can you not? So the Talmud blushed. So he said, it really depends where you are. If where you are is, you know, this woman, so then you look at her clothes right away, your mind starts to wander. If where you are is the Kisei HaKavod, Hashem, that means something. So when a person gets a vague reminder, it brings them right back there. Like, so with the Chavetz Chaim, crazy story. Someone said, Rebbe, I have to buy you a new chair. Your chair is broken. And the Chavetz Chaim didn't want it. Finally, the guy just didn't take no for an answer. Came in one day and plunked the chair down at the Chavetz Chaim's table. So he began to cry. How did he think of this? The pasuk says that Hashem's share is incomplete because the children, the seed of Amalek are not yet wiped out. Hashem's chair is broken. So I can't sit in a broken chair. You have to give me a nice, new, spanking, shining chair. And Hashem has to sit in a broken chair. How do you think of that? And the answer is because he thought of it because that's really what he was. He was Chabad Sayyim realized he was the full moon. Chabad Sayyim realized that what is behind the scenes was really not so visible the whole time. That's the real thing. And as soon as he saw the chair, they gave him a new chair, right away he said, well, what about Hashem? You know, it said the Jews were makabel the Torah, and the Gemara admits that it was very wishy-washy. What did Hashem do? How did Hashem blackmail us? You guys don't remember? Weren't you there? How did Hashem blackmail us? How did Hashem force us? How did he bully us into accepting the Torah? Anyone know? He lifted the mountains over our head and says, if you would like to have a free grave, just say no. Just say no, and you will instantaneously have a free grave, not to pay any type of condition costs, and you can have a very dramatic gravestone. Okay, called Hatsin. Wonderful, right? Gemara says, this is the mother of all kapas. What kind of thing is that? We accepted the Torah, right? The whole thing is a big sham, isn't it? And the Gemara gives an answer that I think is more preposterous than anything I could dream up. The Gemara says, you know what? That's true. For a long time that was true. Like 1,000 years, let's say, that was definitely true. But then something happened. In the days of Ahasuerus, so the Jews re-accepted the Torah. The only thing I can think that's remotely similar is that one day I wake up in the morning, I get out of bed, get dressed very fast, I run to the base medrash over here, it's like before Nate even starts. I open the Aron Kodesh, right, the curtain, and I put my head inside and said, Hashem, I just got this major, major feeling that I have to tell you something. You remember that time when you told Adam not to eat the apple, and he did it anyway? I promise you, God, in the name of all of humanity, I feel so bad. End of story. Right? And imagine that being written up in history books, like other religions take with outstanding for 5,774 years until Moshe Will got up one day on Dalet Adar and he went to the Aron Kodesh and Torah Shraga and said, Hashem, in the name of us all, I'm sorry. And suddenly the sin was wiped out. Har Sinai is the ultimate revelation. Hashem is there revealing himself to everyone at the greatest level of Israel. And yet everything, all of history, all of divinity, everything is open before us, and we still need Hashem to hang a mountain over our head and say, take the Torah, and then take it. But before said, this Torah that we see with the greatest clarity in history is true, is relevant, is worthwhile, and then a bunch of Jews who, by the skin of the teeth, got out of being killed by one of their enemies. There's not much Ruach HaKodesh going on over here. There are definitely no Jews living on their own land. The entire story of Megillah has a big fat zero when it comes to Hashem's name. Everything's very undercover, not clear. And the whole experience takes place in a way where you have to, if you blink, you'll miss the whole thing. If you just see how the chronology works and how far away the events were from each other, you have to be pretty astute to even pick up on the storyline. So the fact, you know, it's like I like to say, when you're at a box seat at a game, a lot of times you're worse off than when you're in the, you know, in the nosebleed, especially a football game, because you can't see anything when you're on the field. What can you see? You look at the screen, right? So here, they're not on the field. They're watching things unfold, but they barely understand what's going on. Right? If we look from a perspective of a written Megillah, we can see it better. Because it skips all, you know, it's like the highlights, you know, when you go on to MLB, you see the highlights, you skip all the, you know, how much you chew that piece of tobacco, again and again, right? You skip all that business, right? See, here, we have total clarity, and for us, we still need the mouth to help out. And they're experiencing it, they don't know exactly what's going on, but nevertheless, they sigh, Hashem, you know what? 1,000 years ago, our forefathers stood in the right Sinai with all the revelation, and they accepted the Torah, but it was under duress, and that's been a stain on our nation's history forever. So now, we are deciding to accept the Torah again. It's not written anywhere, it doesn't say anywhere, it's an app, right? As far as I know, there's no document that says anything about it. So what's binding us to that? How did that happen? And who are we to make a difference? And I think that really brings us back to this point. That first of all, what were the Jews in the time of Ahasuerus thinking about? When they got off big time, and Haman was killed, and they won the battle against the guy, what did they think about? Oh my gosh, let me email my second cousin and see how many guys he took down. Right? No, they thought, you know what? There's been this thing going on for 1,000 years about like not really accepting the Torah, but you know we're so in love with God now, let's do it again. So the fact that they had that on their minds shows that they didn't miss the book, that they realized that one little glimmer of understanding reality properly, that's the real life. Really deep down, we always wanted to accept the Torah. It's been 1,000 years in the making that we're going to just break all the barriers that are stopping us, and we're really going to do it. So the fact that they had that in their mind made them think, not of the wound with those clothes, but of the piece of that covered that's the same color or in the same place as the blue string. It put them in a whole different place, and that's what poised them in order to re-accept the Torah. But the second thing is even more amazing. Who are we? We're nobodies. But we're going to change the whole course of world history? I'm living in Shushan, right? I dressed at Ahasuerus' party. I watched the girls go by one as they were auditioning for Ahasuerus' queen. Right? Who am I? I'm a yogi. No, I'm not a nobody. I can change everything. The Gemara is going to bring me down that I accepted the Torah, and that changed everything. Now that I accepted the Torah, so I righted the wrong that the Jews had hanging over their heads for 1,000 years. So I think that's very key. The whole month of Adar that turns over and screams to us, hey, you make a difference. Hey, keep your eye on the ball. Don't miss the storyline. Don't miss what's really important over here. Don't miss how great that you really are and how much you can really accomplish, because that's what the real story is. And if you don't think about it, you're going to lose that. So it comes out that what's right with Kabbalah Satara, right, is much more than what's wrong with Kabbalah Satara for the past 2,300 years. Why? Because 1,000 years into the game, a few Jews decided, hey, enough's enough. Let's tell Hashem that we're really in the Kabbalah Satara. But this is something for real. This is something we really want. And as much as there are tiny specks compared to the people standing at Har Sinai, nevertheless, they were able to alter the entire experience that we had, that we accepted the Torah willingly. I just want to end off with something that touched me very, very deeply. And that is, a few days ago, a friend of mine handed me an envelope. Inside that envelope was an invitation to take part in a siyum. It's all named Benny Will Classy. So he's making a siyum in a few more days. It's on my birthday, so that's exciting. But besides that, he's making a siyum on Shachris Nights. Okay, so what's so special about Shachris Nights? Let me explain this. The Gemara says, it's an everything. The Gemara says that gives an indication that it used to be that the real Shachris guy, something like that, you know, learn something, you would pass it 100 times. And then the Gemara says that those people used to do it 101 times. And the Pasuk is for this file. The Shachris time will be sent. Get down and see the difference. Bein tzadikul rasha. That's one difference. Then, bein oivid elokim, between someone who serves Hashem, la'asher why avada, someone who doesn't serve Hashem. So the Gemara says, what does it mean, someone who serves Hashem, someone who doesn't serve Hashem? The Gemara says, this is terrifying. The guy who causes 100 times, he's the one who doesn't serve Hashem. The guy who causes 101 times, see, he serves Hashem. And what happened? The guy who causes 100 times doesn't serve Hashem. So I think the Gemara is very simple. It's just telling us one thing. It's telling us, do you Do you recognize the fact that you can be great? Do you recognize the fact that whatever greatness you have inside, you see once in a while, is available all the time? Do you have the shaifa? Do you have the desire to actually maximize on that? To think, oh, I have 3.5 minutes left for the Lucas line. Let me make a private for myself. At one of the data hang-up signs, tell me how many days are left and what we should do and what we're going to get if I do it. Right? Do you have that ambition? And second of all, are you looking at everyone else? Are you looking over your shoulder to see what you should be doing now? Or do you have something that you want to contribute? Maybe it's big, maybe it's small, maybe you don't even know that it's pretty small, but because you want to give it, so you give it. And in fact, the person, okay, the great guys will cause 100 times you hit it. Then you know what? Is that why I'm doing this? Or am I doing this? I really want. And so the most phenomenal people are called Oyzei Hashem. And the other people are called Asher Web, other people don't serve him. Why? Because when a person is doing amazing stuff, but they didn't think of it, they didn't push for it, they didn't feel it. They're just sort of being scripted by somebody else, do this, do that. It's phenomenal, but it's missing that spark of initiative, of connection. And therefore, a person who serves Hashem totally will do another thing. So I thought to myself, I still can't get over that. That's not for looking at. So Ben is making a CM on all the Shas, not Shas to Shas, but all of Sina Moya, 101 times. And the first thing I thought to myself is, besides that, is the fact that that's enormous. I thought to myself, how did you get that idea? Now maybe you'll come with you and write about some facts, right? That's obvious, isn't it? So maybe I shouldn't even ask the question. But I still ask the question, how did you get that idea? And as I thought about it more and more, the question really became the answer, you know? How did you get that idea? But a person is deeply connected. When a person has the right priorities, the right role models, so he automatically is thinking, what could I do? What could I do that could be a little different? What could I do that's not what everyone else is doing? And that reflects a certain beautiful community, a certain confidence in being able to accomplish, being close to Hashem, being on a madriga, and most importantly, realizing that a little extra that I do that's different can make all the difference. Can make all the difference. So if every Shavuos, we still learn the whole night, because this is how we're showing them the Kabbalah Torah, let's realize that we're at a time where we're a little more than we can. This is also time to show them down the Torah. But even in a more powerful way, instead of it being what we were asked to do or even forced to do, it's all about realizing that we're much bigger than we think we are. And what we do has much more of an impact than really makes sense to us. We don't have all the wonderful, amazing materials that it used to be existed by ourselves. But nevertheless, we can also go down history by doing Kabbalah Torah ourselves, not in a small way, but in a big way, and that way have a major impact on the rest of our time, on our lives, and even on all of Klaisa. So I wish us all to live with this reality of the moonshine, of the full moon, of realizing how great we really are, and how much we can really accomplish, and realizing that even the little things are not just an added little speck in the sky, but can be completely transformative for us and for Klaisa.